Hi, everyone. My name is Benno Papari, and this is the Songwriters on Process podcast. Since 2010, I've interviewed over 300 songwriters about, well, their songwriting process. I don't care about favorite cities, tour stories, favorite foods, or anything like that. My goal has always been to treat songwriters the same way that we treat poets and more traditional prose writers. They are writers, plain and simple. In these interviews, we go deep into the specifics of the writing process. This is no, hey, do you start with the lyrics of the music type of interview. Now, a little bit about me. I'm not a songwriter. In fact, I've never written a song in my life. I have a PhD in English language and literature, and I'm a former academic. So as a prose writer, I enjoy exploring how my process intersects with those of songwriters. This is an intelligent conversation about writing between two writers. And that, of course, means we talk a lot about books. The site features interviews across all genres, from metal to jazz, from country to that big category known as indie. You'll find a couple of A-list actors on the site and several members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. Now, I select songwriters to interview who fit into one of two categories. One, do I listen to them already? And two, if I don't, would they make for a compelling and intelligent interview? You can find these interviews across all podcast platforms, as well as at songwritersonpodcast.com. Do you have an idea for an interview or a comment about the site? Hit me up at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Hey, everyone. I'm very excited about this episode because it's a twofer. It's a twofer in that we have two people. We have Eliza McLam and Sarah Tudson. It's been a while since I've done an episode with two other artists at the same time. And the last one may have been with Butch Walker and Matt Nathanson because Walker produced Nathanson's last album. I've done them with other artists, but I did this one because Tudson and McLam have a similar connection. Eliza McLam's debut album is out, or came out, depending on when you hear this, January 19th. It is called Going Through It, and Tudson produced the album. Here's how you may also know them. Tudson is the creator, front person, everything else behind the band. Love the band, Illuminati Hotties. And she is also up for three Grammys for her work on the Boy Genius album. So you may be hearing her name in the light and seeing her name in the lights very soon. I have a feeling. I would hope that album's going to win at least one Grammy. So that, and she produced, as I said, produced McLam's debut album. You also may know McLam because she is the co-host of the podcast Benchtopia. So all of that is background. So I always like doing these interviews with two songwriters. Obviously, Tudson is also a songwriter besides a producer. So this was I love to do this because it's really is a true conversation. They talk to each other, I talk to them, and we kind of explore the process. We went deep into some reading, a lot of discussion of reading and Faulkner. McLam mentioned Faulkner. I don't know the last time I've heard Faulkner mentioned, and I love it. I don't hear many songwriters say they love Faulkner, but I love that. And we talked about we tried to unravel the mystery as to why the floor is such a great place to write a song. I think McLam may have discovered why, but we went deep into that too, because I hear that a lot from songwriters, why the floor is such a great place to write songs. Even if you have a couch or a chair, why is the floor so productive? Maybe we went into the rituals and we talked a little bit about, really actually didn't talk a lot about their collaboration on this album, but it was more an exploration of their individual creative processes. So hope you enjoy again. McLam's debut album is out, or will be coming out, or came out January 19th. It's called Going Through It. And look out for Tudson, her band Illuminati Hotties, but also when her name is mentioned in the Grammy Awards, whenever that is, for her work, three Grammy nominations for her work, production work, and I think engineering on the Boy Genius album. So with that, here is my interview with Eliza McLam and Sarah Tudson. All right, let's get started. So Eliza, we'll start with you.
Are you kind of an everyday type of person when it comes to writing? And we can talk about songwriting, journal writing, anything. Or are you the kind of person that says, I don't want to force it, I'll just write when the mood strikes?
Yeah, I think I definitely lean more into the spontaneity, because I think a lot of my writing is done to process feelings or emotions that I haven't totally figured out in my mind yet and need this external framework to help work them out. But what I find is that if I'm in a space where I'm not on my phone as much, if I'm reading more fiction, if I'm reading other people's work, if I'm listening to a lot of music, I'm more inclined to write, because I think it trains your brain to really work in that way. So I think I have seasons of my life where I feel that I write more and when I write less. And I think it honestly depends so much, first of all, on like what's personally happening in my life, but also on what I'm taking in. So that's been like a powerful realization of like, wow, if I spend all my days on Instagram, my brain has no food with which to like digest and try to make something useful. I'm only going to want to do Instagram stuff. So I have to be very mindful of that.
So the follow-up to that is, if you're not writing, you know, for an extended period, do you start to feel kind of anxious, like I really should be doing it? Or are you okay with those stretches where you're not writing?
It's a great question. I'm learning to be okay with it. I recently went through, like after we wrote the record, or after we recorded the record in April, I was just so album mode, and Sarah was sending me mixes, and I was like always in the universe of those songs, which I think I needed that dedicated energy. But also that meant in that time, I wasn't really working on other things. So that caused me to be a little bit uncomfortable. I did shift more into, I am an essayist as well. I write on Substack, and that's like been a nice change of pace. So I can still, you know, work my writing muscle without having to put the pressure on the songs. But I think I also came to a realization of like, you know, I also need to live more life before I can write about it. And I don't want to, you know, have the narcissism of thinking that I will just always have something really interesting to say. And sometimes I need a period of, you know, intaking other people's work, having that as like a reflective base, and then just, you know, the ability to live enough life to have something to reflect on from that.
Yeah. Sarah, how about you? Are you an everyday type of person, or just when the mood strikes?
You know, I was in a practice for a while where I was an everyday person. And right now I'm sort of finishing the production on a record, which also has sort of taken me away from writing world a little bit. But I have found that like the best sort of like at least starts to songs come from like when my brain is like not really on or working. So I was doing it like I was basically like waking up my phone. I was sleeping with my phone in another room. So I'd wake up and instead of like lay in bed and look at my phone, which I love to do, I was forced to just like get out of bed because there was nothing to do in there anymore. And I just like set a timer and like would write for like the first 20 minutes or 60 minutes of the day. And then that was sort of how I started like getting on like a routine of like generating songs. But I do also feel like the inspiration sort of like waiting to feel inspired, or like inputting a lot of material from other people and sort of like absorbing and composting that in your body. And then, you know, hitting the song when it really is inspiring, I feel is the quicker path to like a fully realized song. Whereas like the sort of routines that I had been going through for a while was a good way to start stuff and not like a great way to like see it all the way through. Like I had to do a lot of editing and then felt less and less sort of like moved by the song, like as I edited away at it. But I don't know, I guess I go out of in and out of seasons of doing both. And like, you know, I know that like Eliza, you like work a lot from like journal stuff and like, you know, like sort of like writing long form and then turning it into music. And yeah, I don't know. I guess I sort of, I love both ways. And right now I'm not in a practice, but for most of last year, I was, and for other years of my life, I had been.
So I've got all these quotes I have on my screen over here by writers, and I like to get your reaction to them. And it's funny because one of them fits perfectly aligns with what you were saying. And this is what Hemingway said. Hemingway says, actually, I don't know if this is up here, but I know this, I've memorized it. Hemingway always says he could never write about Paris when he was in Paris. He needed distance. And I, you know, whether that's like a physical, like a spatial thing or an emotional state, right? I mean, are you more effective writing about something with distance or in the immediacy of it? Which works better for you, Eliza?
Yeah, I think there is something really powerful about writing when the emotion is hot, for, you know, a lack of a better term. And there's also something really great about having that distance, having a new perspective. But what happens is you have two different songs when, you know, in that case. And I think that's really cool. I think, you know, I mean, there's some quote sloshing around from someone saying like every writer is really just telling like one story throughout their entire life. And it's every time they go back to create new projects, they're actually sort of like revising or honing in on or offering this new like perspective that life has given them on this one like ultimately meaningful narrative for them. And so I think that's really interesting. I think a lot of my, you know, my record is a lot about my childhood, which obviously I have distance from being, you know, an adult. But simultaneously, I'm in this strange place where I'm, you know, I'm only 22. And so I'm not so far removed from it as like a memoirist would be at like 50, you know, looking back on things that happened years and years ago, which I think is a really interesting kind of confusing place for a lot of people. And I wanted to challenge myself to write from that. But I mean, I'm really inspired by Sarah's work ethic when it comes to songs and music. I think like she has this ability to, I don't know, schedule it in this way that like requires this discipline that I feel I have not yet honed, you know, because it's not like robotic. It really does just like take this internal mechanism that I'm constantly working on. And most of my songs I write, you know, I'm not a person who sits around with like a bunch of starts and, you know, pieces of things. Like I have written so many songs on like one or two sittings where I just feel that I've tapped into this other place where I can kind of like, just like it kind of comes out. And whether that, you know, a song could have been marinating for months and then ends up just coming out in that swoop. So I think that maybe speaks in some ways to like being able to like having to have that emotion be present enough that you can just access it real in like a really pure place so that it can all come like spilling out.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you this also. Do you find that, you know, when you're a producer and engineer, you're obviously dealing very specifically with time, with deadlines. Do you find that that discipline in that sense makes you a more disciplined writer?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that like I'm, you know, because my day job requires creative attention from other artists, I do sort of have to give myself deadlines and have to say like, okay, like I have to write the album if I have nothing, or I have to go through a bunch of old thoughts or voice notes or song seeds to kind of like get my shit together because I'm leaving for tour in 3 weeks and I won't have the time necessarily to like be dedicated to writing in that way. So some of it is just by the nature of, you know, my job, I guess, and like my schedule and being able to be available and have like a fresh creative mind in like a production way for other artists, because like, you know, I do also get a lot of inspiration from working with other people and like diving into other people's songs, and I find that like little songs will sort of fall out after I've produced a record and it's like the influence of the album I've just worked on for someone else is sort of undeniable, which is fun. And it's just because I've been immersed in that world. And also, you know, as far as like when I'm in a routine of songwriting, it's kind of like when you're in any sort of routine, like your body just has like whatever circadian rhythms, like whatever is at work there, I find that it's more likely that something I like will appear with more regularity if I'm making the space and the time to actually do it. And so, and a lot of the time I'm just writing like random stuff that I don't care about and I'm never going to listen to again. And sometimes it's just like, oh, like I already have this hour set aside, so I'm able to sort of like flush the inspiration and, hit a song that's been needing to come out. And I just sort of haven't for one reason or another.
When it comes to the writing part of it, at least, how important is that ritual to you? And I love even like the quirky superstitions some people have, but, or whether it's like as boring as, you know, like I said, like I never write and revise in the same chair. That's important to me. I feel like I've got to give myself that distance. And I know that if it's not working like in this chair, I'll go somewhere else. And so I have those things. I think that's important to at least know that about myself. So Sarah, we'll start with you, then to Eliza, but are there rituals to your writing process?
Yeah, you know, I kind of have found that like, for one reason or another, I like do a lot of writing like sitting on the floor, and I just get close to the floor and I don't really know why, but I sort of didn't really do that on purpose ever. It just, I'm like thinking back to like how I've written in this room that I'm in right now, which is sort of my studio space, as well as like previous rooms that I've lived in.
Amazing, because, and I want to hear what you have to say, but I have to say that what you say, so many songwriters tell me that they write on the floor.
My entire record was written on the floor.
Okay. All right. So we have to talk about this. Oh, yeah. Sarah, I didn't want to kill your momentum, but I just had to say that it's, we haven't come up with I'm sure there's a very deep answer as to, you know, some deep psychological, and then I'll let you continue. But Britt Daniel from Spoon, I interviewed him and he told me that it was because when he started writing songs, he could not afford a couch. So he wrote on the floor. Now he can afford a couch, but he still has to do all of his writing on the floor. So Sarah, with that, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, I remember in Eliza's old place, like you had like a little room that like was all like fitted out with like some pillows and lighting and like everything there, but there was like no furniture, you know. It was just like a little den like space that was really cool. And I get really frustrated because I feel like all my tools for like recording music are up, you know, like my computer, like everything is kind of like on a desk. And so like, you know, like, I guess I've done some like sort of tape demos with like where, cause that kind of is easy to put on the ground. But, also just like, I really feel inspired like in new locations. And I think that's just because your brain is like, you know, doing stuff. And so like, I'm not a scientist. but like I like booked a few days at like an Airbnb last year and was just like really nervous because I was like, I don't really have anything that I'm like burning to write about or that I am burning to like, for, you know, for my own purposes of like mental health. Like, I don't really want to even get into it. And I booked this Airbnb kind of just being like, hopefully I write a song. And I was like, if I go out there for 3 days or 4 days and don't come up with anything, like, I'm going to be pretty disappointed. But a lot of great stuff came out of that. And I think it was just like shaking it up, being somewhere else, like being away from a lot of distraction, having like limited access to my usual tools. Like, I just had like one or two guitars and a laptop. I didn't really like go full tilt with like all this stuff that I normally can use to mess around. So location, obviously like this weird like grounding floor space thing.
How about time of day?
The morning was really helpful with just sort of getting ideas out and like not being like, that's not good. Like, I feel like once I've had coffee and eaten and sort of like answered emails and gotten into the day, then I'm kind of like too filtered to like think of anything cool, and I'm then sort of becoming like songwriter the professional or producer the professional, as opposed to like songwriter the hobbyist and like the expressionist, you know. So, all right, I don't know, it's fun too.
Eliza, so is there, can you answer the question as to why the floor is so such a great place to write?
Well, I think from a practical standpoint, unlike Sarah, who has her setup kind of up here, I have always worked with like a super janky setup where I'll have like a Scarlett Solo just like plugged into my laptop. I'll have like 4 or 5 journals out. Maybe I have like my electronic keyboard over there. I have my amp, I have my guitar. And so just, I think from a practical standpoint, being on the floor works because I can just crawl around like a gremlin in the night and like shuffle through my materials. And, you know, I also, totally agree with Sarah of like taking it out of this place where it feels like work. I mean, very intentionally, I have another job as well. My podcast supports me and I don't lean on the music for income because I'm afraid of what that would do to my brain. And what joy it might take out of the art of it for me. So I think for me, it's also about like path of least resistance. Like I love keeping a guitar by my bed and truly like being able to just lay on my back and fuck around and make it as easy as possible for me to get into that space. Because I think for me, at least, like to write a song that for me is good, I need to be tapped into this very specific, like vulnerable, open place with myself. And I think the floor also kind of communicates that as well. You're like not higher than anything else in your environment. In fact, you're lower and you're on the same plane as like your instruments and as like your written words that I'm using to reference. It's just kind of like the great equalizer to start. And I also think like from a framework of, I'm like in this type of therapy called internal family systems, which I won't talk your ear off about, but I will say that a very helpful tool from that is the idea that within our multiplicitous self, we have these parts that exist to protect us that have evolved out of pain and necessity, but they necessarily stand in front of these more, you know, soft, squishy, vulnerable emotions. And if my, and I've written songs about the protectors, like my more brash songs, like mythologize me as like kind of my tongue in cheek, like pop, you know, rage anthem. And that is like, there's something valuable about, you know, interacting with who's standing in front of, who's blocking the bigger stuff. But if I really want to like get into some, like, if I'm trying to figure out my own stuff, I need to be in a place where that feels accessible to me. And so I think there's something about making it as easy as possible for myself. And I think the floor is part of that. I also definitely am the kind of person who I function well with minimal distraction. And for me, that happens at night. So I've like, there's so many times where there was like, even last night, my boyfriend was like going to go on a late errand, but he wanted to talk to me when he got back. And he was like, just like sit at your desk and start writing something because then you'll be up when I get back. But like 16, which is like my personal favorite song on the record, like one that required, I feel the most like vulnerability and intention from me. I wrote in one night, just like sitting on the floor with my, you know, keyboard from like, you know, 10 to like 3 a.m. just like being able to kind of zone in when I kind of feel like there's nothing I need to be doing. Like the world is literally asleep in front of me. Like nobody's watching me. I think that's why the night is important to me too, because as a podcaster, I, you know, feel, maybe you feel this too, this sort of, I mean, you get enough parasociality from music, but with podcasting, people can really feel like they know you, people are keeping up with you, people want to know what's going on. It's this constant feeling of being watched that is really difficult for me as an environment to create art within. So I think when I'm on the floor, when I'm in this almost like submissive, vulnerable, totally integrated state in the middle of the night, I'm like, I'm free. And that's when a lot of stuff happens for me.
That's a fucking amazing answer. I feel like that's it. That's no, I love that. That I was really looking for the deep, the psychoanalytic stuff. I think that's great. So by the way, I have to say this. I know I tweeted about this yesterday, but because you had talked about wanting to read more plays.
Yeah.
And since my PhD is in 20th century American theater,
gorgeous.
But related to what you said, It was a family systems approach to five family plays. So
really,
we'll talk about that after we stop recording.
Oh my God, we're going to go deep.
No one wants to hear it. No one wants to hear about dissertations in a podcast about music, I'm sure. And if you really want me to bore you, I'll send you a chapter, but it's exactly Please. What you're talking about. So, so real quick,
drop the bonus app.
Yes,
that's right. The dissertation discussion, as just see the viewer, the, you know, the listeners just falling off a cliff at that point. You gotta imagine. Anyway, so I interviewed Carrie Brownstein from Slater Kinney last week, and she told me, speaking of kind of making the process less precious, she said she writes on a very shitty couch she found on Craigslist, and she loves the fact that it's used and it's old and it's shitty, because she feels like all of you people have your expensive stuff. I write songs on this old ratty couch. A lot of songwriters tell me that they also, speaking to what you're saying, to make the process less precious and thus less pressure filled, they write on the backs of like utility bills, scraps, because if you take that fancy moleskin notebook, then that's more pressure. And I hear a little bit of that. I think that's a little of what you're talking about, right? Kind of the both of you, kind of the less precious you treat it, the more output you get, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Carrie's also onto some like haunted levels right there. I feel like writing in other people's, like writing on someone else's couch, writing on someone else's guitar or keyboard. Like I've found that like writing with the energy of like someone who's not yourself infused is pretty exciting too. And often like, you know, sort of riffs or like thoughts or progressions come out when I'm like holding a friend's guitar, or I know that like I've had people stay at my house while I'm not here, and they were like, yeah, I just like sat down at your keyboard and I wrote the single or whatever, you know? And I'm like, wow, I had no idea. I'm so honored. But it's like interesting, I think, when you pick up someone else's stuff or sit on someone else's couch or your house sitting and you're at someone else's kitchen table, you kind of like have a little more, like you're more tapped into like an energetic field or something.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great, this was a study done a couple of years ago where with Salvador Dali, and it was not done with him, but they referenced him in the study. And what he would do as far as his painting process is he would hold a skeleton key in his outstretched, it's actually a picture of him in this horribly uncomfortable chair. He would hold the skeleton key in his outstretched hand. And he would fall asleep. And when he would fall asleep, the key would drop. It would land on the floor. It would startle him, and he'd go to paint. And what the whole point of the study was, they found there's this part of, and it's right, I don't know what the name of it is. It drives me crazy because I have to go. There's a name for it, but it's not during sleep, and it's that haziness, right? Right before you fall asleep. There's a term for that. That those few minutes when you're not awake, but you're not asleep and you're kind of like hazy. And that's where he found to be he'd take advantage of that. And what they found actually was with creative types, that's a very, very fruitful time. And I'm not talking about deep sleep in the middle of the night, wake up, oh my God, I've got this song idea. It's that kind of hazy spot. So Sarah, I'm curious, then Eliza, I'll ask you, but Sarah, do you ever find that, have you ever been in that situation where you've had those ideas? Because you did mention, I think, falling asleep at some point.
Yeah, well, that's definitely what I was getting after with waking up and writing music before I did anything else, before I looked at my phone or had coffee or ate or anything like that. I was sort of trying to capitalize on that. And I found that after being in the habit for like more than a couple weeks, I basically would wake up like having ideas or having written songs or I'd want to get out of bed and like jump into it while I was still sort of like in a twilight level of like consciousness or whatever. And I love to, Salvador Dali is my birthday twin. So I love to hear that he's doing crazy stuff and only existing in a place of sleep, like a classic Taurus. But yeah, I think that is a really exciting time. And same thing with like working late at night, you know, there's nothing online that's interesting to look at anymore. Your friends stop texting you. You're kind of like in like a, almost like a boredom state. And it's not dissimilar from like kind of being almost falling asleep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Eliza, I think I didn't ask you also about the ritual in general, but is there a time of day when you get your best writing done, but also do you find that that hazy space in the nighttime is also profitable?
Yeah. I mean, as I was saying, I think the deep night is really important to me. I also randomly like write a lot in the car. Like if I'm on a long drive, I have voice memos that say like US 101. It's like me in traffic, like humming indiscriminate things. But also in terms of that kind of like hazy state you were talking about, there are times where frequently I'm about to go to sleep at night. And then I jolt up and grab my phone and like enter a bunch of thing in my notes. Like I was on the precipice of falling asleep, sat up out of bed, turned the light on. My boyfriend's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, oh, yes, I know what the music video is going to be. And I had the whole storyline of the music video just like boop, appeared to me. And I think part of that is because I'm you know, so plugged into technology all the time that like those times when I'm in traffic or when I'm about to fall asleep are like the times really that my brain gets to take a breather. And that reminds me that that's fucking scary. I should have other times when my brain feels like it can breathe. But that concept also reminds me, I don't know if you've ever like talked to a woo-woo person who like lives in New Mexico or something. And they're like, oh, I just love it here because the veil is thin. If you've ever heard anyone say the veil is thin, like what they mean by that usually, I think, is like the veil between like our perceptible or reality and like the, you know, imperceptible, or between like the living and the dead or anything like that. But that concept is really interesting to me. And I think that's kind of what the Dali thing is getting at as well, of like the veil is thin between that kind of unconscious, unguarded mind. Sarah's wife and I, Maddie, talk all the time about dreams. She's really into dreams. And it's so fascinating because things happen in dreams that horrify you, like, and you yourself are participating in actions and dreams that horrify you that your conscious brain would never let you imagine or follow through. But your unconscious brain like has no cop in there, you know? Yeah. So I think that is also like a really interesting thing. And so when the veil is thin, I feel, between you and yourself, really, when you're in a place where you're not afraid of yourself, is when, to me, that's when I can actually start getting shit done. And however that happens, whether it's, you know, being in this weird like dream wake state, or it's, you know, staying up super late to the point where I could be asleep right now, like, you know, I think that kind of in between, because that's, I mean, my songwriting, really, I see my like purpose on this earth to be like an emotional translator, to kind of take this nebulous world of emotions that's so hard to understand and try my best to bring it a little bit closer to the ground, and, you know, to a way that's communicable. And so that I deal with the veil a lot there too. I'm always thinking about, you know, when does an emotion go from up here in, you know, nebulous space to down here and something that I can kind of like look at and process.
So along those lines, Agatha Christie, the writer, once said the best time to write a book is when you're doing the dishes. And I take that to mean, at least for me, getting song ideas or any kind of creative ideas when we're engaged in mundane activities, when our unconscious brain kind of can bubble to the top because the conscious brain is doing something that requires no thought. So the number of songwriters who told me they've gotten great ideas while they are gardening, doing the dishes, vacuuming, folding clothes, you know, taking a shower, I think there's a lot of truth to that, that we don't sit down and say, I'm going to think of a great idea. It's always when we're doing something that requires no forethought. So, Sarah, I'll start with you. Do you get those ideas? Have you ever gotten ideas when you're doing those mundane activities?
Totally. Yeah. The car is actually a big one for me too. And there's songs that I've written top to bottom in the car, just being like, and it's really an interesting exercise because we're so stimulated all the time. And the car is also a place where you're not supposed to access your phone and you're not supposed to be texting or scrolling. And so if your phone's, you know, away, the radio's off, as a creative person, we're kind of, we're kind of subconsciously trying to fill the space up with whatever's mm-hmm. going on. And we're also focusing on, like, you know, getting from place to place or, you know, driving safely, whatever. But like, yeah, I think that the car for sure has been a big one for me as well. Or like anytime I've sort of like, you know, before I was doing music full time or like doing this at like creative music as a full time job, you know, I had gigs doing assistant engineering and there was a lot of dishwashing, a lot of cleanup, a lot of mic setup, a lot of stuff where it's like kind of an annoying task. I just gotta like do this and it doesn't require any creative effort and it doesn't require, I'm just following the like input list I was handed, or I'm just going to the grocery store to get the rider for whoever's coming in. Like that was also a pretty fruitful time for me to sort of like accidentally write something.
So I just earlier today interviewed Mary Timoney, the legendary guitarist. And yeah, she said that she had a lot when she was just starting out at writing. She had a lot of song ideas when she was working in an office stuffing envelopes, because it was like the most mundane activity. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I love stuffing envelopes because I got so many song ideas when I was doing that. So that was a really cool story. But anyway, Eliza, yeah. Is that a fruitful time for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, I do a lot of writing in the car, and anytime when my brain just kind of has that space to be freer. I also just think there's something about like doing the mundane tasks that happen frequently, like dishes or laundry or driving somewhere, that kind of like remind you of the structure of your own life. And I think that is like an interesting jumping off point, because I think we're always going to have a thought about the way that our life is going, whether it's like reflecting on, oh wow, this is different than it used to be, or like, okay, I'm only going to do the dishes so many more times before I die. Like, I wonder what number time this is before I'm going to kick the bucket and never do dishes again. Like, it kind of puts you in this, maybe I'm just an overthinker and everyone's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but it always puts me in this sort of like existential place where I'm like, wow, I'm folding laundry again. Like, this is the maintenance required to be a human being. Like, I'm sort of making a choice to live every day for, you know, and you don't even really think about it that way because you just wake up and you live, but every day you live is a day you're not killing yourself. Sorry to be brash about it. And so it gives you this like framework of like thinking of every day you live as like you're making a series of choices. So I think when you're doing those kind of life maintenance things, you're kind of primed for this position to think a little on like a larger scale on top of all the stuff, which I agree with about allowing your unconscious mind to kind of like be present, being like more free of distractions. Yeah, I just think it's like a very profoundly human state that provokes reflection.
Two more questions. One, you both mentioned voice memos, and this is the point where songwriters get very anxious because I ask them if there's any organization to those voice memos on their phone, and they almost always respond no. And I wish that I did, but there are thousands of them and it drives me crazy. So, so Sarah, is there any organization to those voice memos, those song ideas?
No, I mean, I try like basically every time I'm like in a place of like writing a new album or something, I feel like I kind of go through stuff and try to like put them in some kind of like organized Dropbox of like, or at least like name them. So it just shows up as like new recording 310, new recording 311, whatever. So like, yeah, I think in some ways it's, I guess, just dates. Also, like it kind of auto categorizes as dates, so you can kind of be like, oh, I was like, I was doing this in February, like maybe that's when I wrote it, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much chaos.
Yeah, and you're okay with that? That's not a
Yes, because I think that in some ways, like, I just get so frustrated going through and like forcing myself to listen to myself that I'd rather just make something new. And also no, because I'm sure there's stuff that I'm missing just because I've moved on from it.
Yeah. Eliza, how about you?
Yeah, I've actually recently changed my voice note system. I used to, like if I would write, as soon as I wrote one line, I would record it so I wouldn't forget it. And then I would maybe write another line and then I would record the previous line with that one. So I would end up having like 15 different recordings that are like 5 seconds, then 10 seconds, then 15 seconds. But what I realized is that then that kind of marries me to a certain like structure or melody, and melodies for me are so slippery. Like I was getting constantly frustrated with like trying out a melody, being like, ooh, I like that. Now let me take it from the top. And then I arrive at that line. I'm like, fuck, what did I do? Like, I don't remember anything about that. So my new system is whenever I'm going to sit down and write, I just boop, click the voice memo and leave it going. So I'll leave it going for like 20, 30 minutes, however long I'm working on it, until usually like I'll write like a verse or two, or, you know, my most common frustrating one is I'll write verse, pre-chorus, chorus, and then I have like so many of those songs I'm just like, well, I don't know where to go from here. But I'll leave that running as I go. So then if I'm ever at a place where I'm like, shit, like, what did I just do? Or if I get stuck later on, I can scrub back. And of course it's torturous scrubbing back through like, you know, minutes of you being like, whoa, you know, just like trying to figure it out. But it has solved my problem of my slippery melodies. So usually I'll see, you know, it's staggered in my voice. If you scroll through, it'll just be like a 30-minute clip and then like a 45-second clip right above it on the same date. And so that's like the session and then like the, you know, what we got out of it. And usually I'll just title it something, the little one, so I can refer back to it. I'll just like, literally last night I wrote something and it's called Box Fan. And like, that's just like part, like one tiny lyric of it that like, not the title, no pressure to be that, just some way to be like, oh, right, that's what it was. So that's my new system, which is more organized than I could have ever hoped to get. And it's working for me so far.
You're still light years ahead of most songwriters. So that's still light years ahead. That's impressive. All right, last question. So let's talk about books, about reading. For me at least, if I don't read every day, I start to get anxious. I feel like I need to be reading every day. So I always set time aside to do that. I am not an author person. So when I finish a book, my first instinct isn't, oh, let me read everything by that person. It's let me read other voices. So like I'm reading the Best American Short Stories anthology from 2022. So it's, you know, like 25 short stories from 25 different authors. So that's kind of what I do. So I'm not really a genre person or an author person. So Sarah, we'll start with you. What are you, a genre person, author person? Who do you like to read?
I jump around a lot and I always have like between 2 and 5 books like going at the same time, much to my own detriment. But I think it also is sort of like, you know, sometimes when you're going to bed at night, you watch Bob's Burgers and sometimes you watch Succession. Like, you know, like I think that it's sort of nice to have like some nonfiction or some memoir, and then like a true fiction or like poetry or whatever sort of laying around that's inspiring. Yeah. So yeah, I kind of jump around a lot. I think I went through phases of like trying to read a lot of one author, or like I get like excited and maybe do like 2 in a row from the same person. But I do love to be reading, and I love like the e-reader thing, because suddenly like my backpack became like 30 pounds lighter on tour, which was awesome. So yeah, I guess like I like to mix it up because I think I get bored easily. And if I just do a bunch of the same thing in a row, it feels like I've just read like one giant long book and yeah, not like a bunch of different stories or thoughts or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The book I'm reading now, I got a footless title. So I'm reading, and I'm the same. So I can read two books at a time. I've done three. Five's amazing. Although I agree with you, like I will do, they've got to be different. So like I'm reading that short story anthology, and then I'm reading An Immense World by Ed Young. It won the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction last year, but it's about, he's a staff writer for The New Yorker, and it's all about animal senses and basically how we're getting it all wrong. Like we're always trying to see animal senses through our eyes. And he's not a science writer, which is what makes it great is that, or he's not a scientist. So he's able to explain these topics for science idiots like me. But it's fascinating. That's awesome. Learning about, you know, animals and, you know, when we see it's cold outside and we see an animal in the snow and we think, oh, they've got to be freezing. Well, they're really not. And all that kind of stuff. But I kind of like to mix it up that way, but I love that. I think I'm the same way you are, that kind of always got to have those different genres in there. So
yeah, I kind of like, even if I read like maybe freshman year of college, I read Brave New World and 1984 like back to back, and to this day I just have no idea which one was about, like, right. It's like the same, it's just like one giant New World sci-fi story in my brain.
Wow. Yeah. All right, so Eliza, yeah, who do you like to read? I know you said you wanted to read plays, but do you have genres or authors that you like?
Yeah, this is such a huge question for me. I'm such a book person. I'm such an English nerd. I signed up to go to college as a political science major, and my guidance counselor kept having monthly meetings saying, so you need to start taking political science classes. You're taking a bunch of classes right now. And I don't know, you're a sophomore at this point. You've fulfilled one requirement, but you basically are on your way to having a degree in English right now. So you got to figure it out. So, and then I dropped out of college and solved that problem for myself. But when I was in school, I got really into Southern Gothic literature. I love Faulkner. There's a Faulkner quote in the sleeve of my vinyl on this debut, which is, memory believes like longer than knowing remembers, longer than knowing even wonders, which just is kind of like, I don't know, my true raison d'etre, but I loved Faulkner in college, especially. I loved Toni Morrison. Like, Beloved was the first book I read, and I was like, wow, this just like changed my entire life. I also felt a similar way reading Baldwin. Like, I read Giovanni's Room one summer when I was like taking a solo trip to my grandmother's like declining, decrepit, like beach condo. And I was like, oh, I'm in Paris. I mean, like Sarah and like you too, I like to jump around and read a bunch of different things. I recently have gotten into like longer kind of family dramas. I really love, like I read Jonathan Franzen's Crossroads, which I really liked. I'm reading right now The Bee Sting, which I think was, it's like a set in Ireland. It's, I think, New Yorkers or New York Times. It was a big, people liked it. I like it so far as well. But yeah, I feel really inspired by that. And actually my favorite read of the last year is a nonfiction book, which is strange for me. But it's called Having and Being Had by Eula Biss. And it's this like extended essay, basically. I mean, she has chapters and it's a return to, you know, a bunch of different topics about, you know, commodities and capitalism and accumulating things. And I don't know, I just, for me, it seems like she had some like things she was thinking about. And then anytime she had a thought, she went and researched like 20 different people who had already thought about that. And then, so this book is like a highly synthesized, like incredibly rich, but like easy thing to read. And then that whole framework really inspired me. Sarah, like you were saying, I can't read too many of the same, you know, kind of books back to back. So it just feels like I read one long book. I actually really like doing that. Now, especially after reading this Eula Biss book, because I'm like, oh, that's what she did. She was like, I wonder about this. And then she went and found a bunch of, you know, people who were talking about it. So I really like that, especially in this world now where we're increasingly like going from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. Everything moves so fast. We don't have time to like dive in. The idea of treating reading as like a study almost, of like trying to figure out different angles to this one thing. So that's, I'll shut my trap now because I really could talk books forever. But I'm glad you asked that question because I think, I mean, every songwriter that I really love and respect like reads, which I think is an essential part of it.
I mean, I could tell you very, very clearly, there's a direct through line. The songwriters who are the voracious readers write the best lyrics. That shouldn't be an earth shattering revelation, but how the hell are you going to know how to write words that sound good, that have meaning, that just work well, that aren't horribly cliched unless you've been exposed to language? That should be so obvious. You know, it's funny. The occasional songwriter will tell me that reading is a way to escape. So they don't really do it. It's not a source of inspiration at all for songs. Although some tell me, yeah, that's a great line. You know, I want to write something like that. So, and then we'll stop. But Eliza, I'm curious, like, where is that a source of inspiration for your songwriting?
Yeah. I mean, I think I took a class in college called Faulkner and Morrison, where we read William Faulkner and Toni Morrison, who are really interesting people to study alongside each other, because I think what they were doing with language was just so innovative. And so, especially for like being a teenager at the time, you know, being like 17 years old in my freshman year of college, like not being familiar with like the breadth of like what we were doing with literature, seeing that and seeing the power, truly the power of words. And I mean, Faulkner is so fucking dense and long. And like, he has these sentences that are just pages, pages, pages. And you skim over and you're like, this means nothing. Like, this guy's a crank. And then you read it out loud. And it's the way that the words start to materialize in your head when you take the deliberate time to read it in the rhythm. It's almost, it's like Shakespeare, you know, it's like, it's all about how that goes together. And the way that like both of them deal with memory and trauma and narrative. I think just those two authors for me encapsulate something that is just so special about words and language. And I think I'm always trying to get to a place where I can utilize, because they're utilizing like the full range of what words and language can do, which is so inspiring to me. So I think that's why they, in terms of like structure and narrative and just like the lyricism, are so like important to me, because it was just such a shining example of like the innovation that can happen even just in the space of like a page.
And that's it for today's episode. Check back in a couple of weeks for a new episode. I do try to post these every 2 weeks, sometimes with more frequency, sometimes with less. A lot of that depends on my work commitments, my family commitments, and also when artists can talk to me. It's not easy to get these interviews. Speaking of interviews, did you know this is a relatively new podcast? I only started podcasting about a year ago. Well, depending on when you're listening to this, I should say 2022. But from 2010 to 2022, all of my interviews were transcribed, and they are all there archived for you to go down that deep rabbit hole. So if you go to songwritersonpodcast.com and click on From the Archives in the top, at the top, you'll see all of those transcribed interviews. I think there's over 200. So go down that rabbit hole. There's a lot of great interviews there. But you'll find all of those there. Again, the podcast itself is relatively recent, so there's a lot of reading you need to be catching up on with those old interviews. Speaking of interviews, if you have suggestions for interview subjects or want to comment or complain, anything like that, email me at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. That's ben@songwritersonprocess.com. And that's it for today's episode. This wraps it up. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good one.